Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my friend, my co-host, Parker Fleming. Parker, it feels like it's just been a couple days since I've talked to you.
Honestly, we were just talking before we got on air, and it's like, dude, we don't have any banter to do because we talked on Monday, and it's Wednesday. And Grant, I like you. You're one of my closest friends. We talk for a couple hours every week, but shoot, man, I need some space after this.
Yeah, no kidding. For those unaware, so we recorded the offense. By the time you're hearing this, we recorded the offensive preview last Monday, but this is Wednesday, and the offense preview comes out tomorrow in real time. It's a real sort of inception situation. Interstellar maybe deals more with time. I don't know. But point of the matter is, it's 2 days since we last recorded and nothing much has happened. We're just here to talk about the defense.
Yeah. So thank you, Grant, for your flexibility, and thank you, listeners, for your flexibility. I'm going to go on vacation next week, kind of a pre-semester, pre-season vacation. I know it's week zero, but I'll be on the grid. It's fine. I'll do stat previews, whatever. And it was just like, man, it's just going to be inconvenient to give up a night on vacation to podcast. So we figured we'd knock both of these out and then pace them out so you all have the same content that you're used to. And a couple of people DM'd me and asked if we were going to go back to two a week starting this week. And I will say no.
No.
But the Sunday after the Colorado game, we'll be good to go pending you getting back to Houston.
We haven't
talked about that, but
either
Sunday or Monday. Yeah, we'll be back to our Sunday night kind of 45-minute quick recap, and then Wednesday we'll get that deep dive preview going as well.
Yeah, I have an inside source on Tarleton State, so I'm really excited for that preview. And in week two, we're going to get into the nitty gritty of that offense. So
Tarleton State, we should do, because there's a couple of new faces on the TCU media scene. This goes contrary to what we talked about off air, but Tarleton State week, we should just be like, dude, just come tell us who you are, the new people, and
Parker
talk
has
to Steven.
Torpedoed every bit of planning we've done in the last 5 minutes.
I think that'd be a good idea. I forgot that we had FCS in week two.
We do have an FCS. We'll get to how much that game terrifies me. I mean, TCU is going to win, but do not schedule Tarleton State. It's just a bad idea. There's no upside to it. There is only a downside. We'll get to that later. Parker, I suppose we should talk about the Frogs again. So we talked about the offense last week, and I think we kind of got into some dark places on how bad it was at times. Parker, the offense was the strength of TCU football last year. Now we have to talk about the defense.
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
I can I just toss in there?
I
feel bad that we didn't, not bad, but I was like, oh, I wish we had talked a little bit more about the scheme aspect of it.
Yeah.
And a little bit more about what we're going to see. But Grant, you reminded me, I mean, March or something?
March 10th.
There was an interview with Drew Davison, who's left TCU Media, RIP. He's still alive. That's not a funny joke. Sorry.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's doing better things.
We love Drew. One of the few cases where someone said, I'm changing jobs to spend more time with my family, where he actually meant that he was going to spend more time with his family. But they did an interview that was really great, and we did some in-depth stuff. So you reminded me of that, Grant. And so I do regret that we didn't get as deep on the schematic side, but we have all season to do that. We're going to break it down. We're going to chart the plays and talk about it. So not a big deal. I'm not going to lie. I was a little wary to dive into this defense, man. It was kind of like when you squish a spider in your house and you're like, dude, I gotta lift my foot up and look at like the gross, nasty mess that I've left, but you gotta do it. And so it was a little worrisome for me to start, but I think I feel a little bit optimistic after kind of diving in here. I don't know if that holds
for
you.
I don't know. It I'm more optimistic than not, just because, and we kind of talked about this last episode, just opening up the windows, getting the dust around, saying, hey, we are revamping things. We are not going to do it the way they've been done, maybe for better, maybe for ill, but there's going to be some bit of change and not the same pounding our head into the wall that TCU has done for the last, probably 5 or 6 years in terms of not innovating. Of course, as you know, they bring in Joe Gillespie from Tulsa as the new defensive coordinator. Runs a 3-3-5 system. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But Parker, why don't you go ahead and tell us just how bad TCU was on defense last year?
It was so bad. Grant, TCU's defense was so bad And then you say, how bad was it?
How bad was it?
They let anyone with, they let a white guy at SMU with a neck roll average 7 yards per rush against them last season.
Awful.
Awful. Funnily enough, just the way the world works, I was actually in Boulder, Colorado, watching the SMU game with a friend. And about a year later, I'm going to be in Boulder, Colorado, watching the TCU game. So funny how life works. Yeah, but yeah. TCU's defense was 110th in defensive EPA per play. They were 112th in success rate, 108th against the pass, 100th against the rush and success rate. If we look at EPA, 85th against the pass, slightly better, but 117th against the rush because, you know, we talk about run-pass splits on this podcast. If you don't have to pass against someone, you shouldn't. If you can just run for 7 yards a carry, you should do it. Grant, 62.1% of non-garbage time possessions for TCU's defense ended in a quality possession. That's 113th in the nation. 4.78 points per quality possession. 4.78 points per quality possession. That's 101st in the nation. Absolutely atrocious. Grant, you're only going to get mad when I say this stat right here. TCU's defense was 24th in starting field position.
Well, that's because Jordy Sandy was putting them in places to succeed.
They were given every opportunity to succeed. Side note, Grant, take this down. We need to do an entire special teams podcast next year.
Yes.
They were given every opportunity to succeed. 24th in starting field position on defensive drives. 113th in quality possession rate allowed. Absolutely terrible. 100th on first downs allowed on first and second down. 113th in early downs EPA. 84th in third and fourth down success allowed. 113th in defensive points per drive. Grant, 3.15 per drive. More than a field goal per drive all season. Atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. This defense was just so bad, and the more that you dive into it, the worse that it gets.
Yeah, you have it here. So I kind of want to talk about this a little bit. Havoc stats, right? In terms of, you know, how much havoc, how much chaos are you creating from a defense? So looking at it now, TCU had 15 sacks last year. That was in 12 games. In 2020, in 10 games, they had 31. Jesus Christ. their stop
this,
rate
this,
was only...
This graph that I tweeted it out today so you guys can look it up yourself that working off of, it just bears out our central axiom. Like, it can always get worse. I made it like blue to red. Blue was good. Red was bad. And this 2021 line is just absolutely terrible. Less than half of the sacks they had in 2020, fewer than half the sacks in two more games.
Parker, look at the secondary. They broke up 6% of passes thrown their way. Only 10% of targets were contested. Parker, they broke up 14% of passes in 2020. Six.
Yeah.
They broke up 18 passes all year in 12 games.
Yeah. I mean, any number that you have here, you look at like the forced fumbles, right? I think that like fumble recovery is probably a lot of luck. Forced fumbles is some skill. That number has decreased every year since 2016 or 17. And it was 8 in 2017, 6 in 2019 or 18, 5 in 2019, 5 in 2020 in fewer games, and then 2 last year. That to me, Grant, tells you a story of people running after a defender and pulling them down from behind, not hitting them with your head down and punching out the ball. No, like just absolutely terrible.
There were no dogs on that defense last year. Not a single one.
For as much as I think we made a mistake, Grant, because last season we talked a lot about how there was no hating ass offensive linemen.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been a theme. I don't know that there's any hating ass defenders on TCU this last year. And I went on Tortillas and Takes, the Texas Tech podcast from the 1012 network, and talked to Albie Shore for a little bit. And he made a joke about like Gary Patterson sweating, right? Which is a common joke.
Yeah, ha, ha, ha. Yeah.
And I kind of explained to him a little bit like Gary Patterson's sweating so much because on defense, if you don't understand the system, on defense, Gary Patterson is literally calling out assignments for all 11 players. He knows what play is coming. And what happened in 2021 is that they did not do a good job of getting the install in, and these guys did not know the calls in practice. And so on the sideline in 2021, Gary Patterson was yelling at guys without using like calls. He normally has these one word calls to do these plays. He was like telling guys like, hey, go like TJ Clark, go over there and cover this guy, and absolutely screaming. And it was just an absolute disaster. That's why you heard the narrative of these guys won't learn. Like, I can't do anything. Gary did not do a good job of install and then gave up. And a lot of the players gave up too because they didn't know what was expected of them. And it just turned into an absolute terrible mess.
Yeah, and then you add in the injury concerns as well, especially in the secondary, and it turns into just a total effing nightmare for the entire season. I mean, there wasn't really a single game where you could point to last year and say, well, the defense played well. No, it was all just pretty much awful. Right? I mean, there wasn't. Yeah, I'm not remembering. I'm not forgetting one. Cal, maybe, but...
No, dude, Cal scored 30 points and Cal didn't do that. So, like, look at, what I did is I looked at like week by week and I looked at their EPA in that game versus their EPA all season. So, I won't read all of these. I'll just point at some highlights. So, Cal averaged, this one sucks. Cal on the season outside of the TCU game averaged -0.07 EPA per pass. Cal in the TCU game averaged 0.21 EPA per pass.
Okay, so not great.
No, terrible. Absolutely terrible. SMU, no, that one's fine. That one's fine. Let's read some of these outliers that are just really bad. The rushing ones are where you really get it. Cal averaged 0.16 EPA per rush on the season against TCU is 0.3. SMU averaged 0.05 EPA per rush on the season
against TCU
is 0.26. Texas Tech averaged 0.05 EPA per rush on the season against TCU is 0.408. Oklahoma 0.139 on the season, 0.39 overall. Iowa State averaged 0.0812 on the season at EPA per rush. Against TCU, they had a 0.805 EPA per rush. It was so bad, Grant. Anyone with a pulse ran for 200 yards against TCU last year. Anyone with a pulse.
I've lost the ability to speak at how bad that defense was last year. Parker, can we put a pin in it? Can we turn the page? Can we look to the future? I think we've established how awful TCU was on defense last year.
We have, and Grant, I have long said to you that we don't have enough Bob Seger song titles in our podcast.
Okay.
And so I'm here for Turn the Page. That's great. Let's turn the page.
It's the same old cliche. Is that a woman or a man?
In case you guys don't know, I'm a white dude who grew up in the South and I'm over 30. That's why I talked about Bob Seger right there.
Hollywood Nights is the best Bob Seger song, right?
Dude, it might be UMC.
Oh, yeah, UMC's good. I have a soft spot for Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, too. But
No, Night Moves. It's cheesy.
Okay.
It's been played to the point that it's cheesy, but, like, it's the best song.
Okay, all right. Parker woke last night.
It's like when somebody plays Stairway to Heaven on guitar, you're like, dude, come on, this is played out. But also, like, it's cliche for a reason. Yeah.
I once, never mind. That's a story I'll tell off air.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm entertaining all the versions from talking about TCU's defense,
no.
But...
it was a story. No, that is not one that makes me look really good.
That is an awful segue for this podcast. Speaking of Night Moves, I have a story. It's going to be embarrassing. It's going to reveal personal details.
It was about Stairway to Heaven, actually. Here's a transition. TCU was on a Stairway to Hell last year on defense, and now maybe we're back up going to the top. Bring in Joe Gillespie from Tulsa. You lose O'Shawn Mathis, you lose Kari Coleman. That's 65% of pressures at defensive end, 33% of all team pressures. You lose TJ Carter, you lose the Kendrick Van Zandt, who now kind of latched on with the Dallas Cowboys. It's really sort of the crux of the defense last year. So what are we getting now, right? What is Gillespie bringing? I call him Joe Gillespie, bringing to TCU, Parker.
Yeah, so this is one of the most dramatic changes in college football, Grant. I really don't want to again, we're going to call it the 4-2-5 and the 3-3-5 as our friend Coach Bass chided and advised us. The 4-2-5 is not a defense, the 3-3-5 is not a defense. Those are personnel groupings, and you'll find that like Joe Gillespie is going to use four down in red zone situations and all that. But we're going to have a fundamental shift of principles in defense that is going to be as stark a change as there is in college football. Sonny Dykes really went and got a guy who kind of frustrated him. And this is absolutely a coup. A huge hire. I think I'd feel way worse about the Sonny Dykes hire if he had not brought Joe Gillespie in. You know, he's been there for he was DC for the last three seasons at Tulsa. And if you look at the EPA per pass and EPA per rush, Tulsa was trending up until 2019. And after 2019, under Joe Gillespie, they've trended downward in a positive, like in a good direction. Defense, obviously down, fewer points. Really impressive job by him. He's going to run a 3-3-5, and we're going to have a huge difference in terminology, right? TCU was two DEs, two defensive tackles, a Mike and a Will, and then you had that dollar sign is how Gary Patterson always wrote it, was a kind of that safety, and then you had free safety, strong safety, cornerback. And there's going to be a slight change in kind of the personnel that we see, but we bring a defensive mind who understands the game at a philosophical and a technical level, and who runs a defense that doesn't require every player to know every plausible outcome, but it's more so principles-based, and more so our general founding principle is we're going to behave this way, and if then. So Gary Patterson's defense was, here's your technical assignment. Here's like 100 one-word calls. You've got to memorize them. You know what to do in every situation. Joe Gillespie's defense is a little bit more of if-then, right? If this happens, then you do this. If this happens, then you do this. And it gives the defense a longer leash. That's kind of going to be the theme of the episode here. You're going to see less mental requirement of the defense, maybe more physical requirement, but I think that's a good shift. And it's going to be, hey, if this happens, then this happens. And so I'm excited about what TC's personnel can do with this, even if I have some questions about the holes.
So let's get to the personnel while we're here. As mentioned, lose Mathis, Coleman, Carter, Van Zandt. The defensive line, Parker, stop me if you've heard this before, may be the biggest concern for TCU this year, especially but after losing.
There's only three of them, not four of them. So,
well, wait. You say that, then wait till we get to the linebacker, which I think may be the biggest concern. And there's now three of them instead of two. So we're just kind of shuffling around credit card debt here until we can get ourselves back afloat. I am so jacked to talk about DeMonic Williams that
I'm start losing
sleep. We have to, dude, DeMonic Williams is a freak, Parker. 6'2", 320 at nose tackle. He is going to see playing time as a freshman.
He should take snap one. The guy is
a baller. Yeah.
He is the official player of the Purple Theory podcast. I am already trying to figure out how to get him on the podcast. You've seen like the little clips that they put on of him at camp. I mean, he is a absolute freak, and everything that TCU needs at nose tackle, even if he is young and unpolished, like I'm so optimistic about what this guy could do.
Yeah, and he fits a definite need because there really wasn't a guy on TCU's roster that you would trust to play nose tackle in a three down set that could dominate, right? I mean, Altric Barlow, I think, moved over from offensive tackle to nose tackle. And Sonny Vesey played some DT last year. He is back, but DeMonic Williams has like the physical tools and sort of that freshman hunger that you need to just go wreak havoc at nose tackle.
Yeah. I think this is really great. Grant, what we're going to try and do here as we go is we're going to map the TCU defense on the Tulsa's defense of 2021. I think that's going to be a useful exercise to, one, calibrate expectations from each position, but also to kind of help us understand what the goal of each position is, because TCU has been accustomed to watching one type of defense for a really long time. And this is new. This is new for me. It's new for you. And it's new for the casual fan. So the comp here for DeMonic Williams is not Jackson Player. We're going to talk about Jackson Player, who transferred to Baylor later. But the comp for him is Tyrese Stevenson, who was 6'3", 351. He only had 14 pressures on 335 snaps. He only had 7 tackles. Wasn't productive in kind of the quote-unquote box store stat lines. But Grant, it's not measured. What is Dominic Williams there to do? He's there to clog the A-gaps. That is the fundamental principle of the Joe Gillespie defense, is the nose tackle has to go down with the center and at least one of the guards, right? Got to get doubled, got to clog that up. And so Tyree Stevenson, you see that. He had a ton of snaps, but his numbers weren't very high. So I don't want to see anyone saying, you know, oh, Dominic Williams only has 3 tackles on the season. Watch the game. Watch when the ball is snapped. Watch Dominic Williams kind of clogging up the middle there. That's going to be huge. I think in the run game, that's going to be so big, because a lot of TCU's run game last season involved, a lot of their failures involved kind of with a zone and a cutback. And there was a defensive back who had to take a bad angle because the defensive linemen were totally moved by the offensive line and weren't kind of creating disruption at all. And the offense had this great lanes. Dominic Williams, or whoever plays no tackle, we'll talk about that in a second. If they can clog up the A-gap, that automatically disrupts the offensive run scheme and the blocking, and frees up the linebackers and the safeties to take better angles and make tackles there. So I think that's huge. One big issue is, like, obviously a dude who's 320 is not going to be able to play 4 downs. In passing situations, I don't know that he's going to be super valuable. So there's some open questions as to how TCU kind of supplements him. But as a 3 down, as a 2 down run stopper, I think Dominic Williams fits the mold perfectly.
I do too. But let's talk about who may provide a sort of pass rush or be that sort of third down guy, maybe on the end. So Dylan Horton's probably going to be the main edge rusher for, well, we talked a little bit too, we should say before we wrap this up, Altreet Barlow did move over from offensive tackle, and Sonny Misi may sub Dominic Williams. I guess that's probably the 2 guys on the roster.
Both of those guys are going to see playing time, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And Barlow moving, and that's a big question. Is interesting, because he's a big,
I'm into that. He's huge. He's tall.
Yeah.
That's the big deal, is like, hey, you have a freak, but he can't play 4 downs. That's why like Vita Vea for Tampa Bay is so good, because he has the conditioning to be able to play those downs. And so I pulled us back to the nose tackle. I want to emphasize, nose tackle is the most important position on this defensive line for this 3-5 scheme. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to ask a lot of a freshman. That's a big question mark. And the guys behind him are an offensive lineman who hasn't played much, and a guy who has a very demonstrated history of not being good against the run. Might be better in a different role, but that's a question mark for me. That kind of seems like the bellwether for the defensive line. If Dominic Williams can play and these 2 guys can relieve him in committee, maybe TCU's run defense will be worth a damn, but that's still an open question.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. Are we good to move to end real quick?
Yeah, let's go to end. I didn't mean to.
I'm not your middle school teacher.
I'm not in charge here. I just get excited about like the backups and the storylines, and I was like, dude, I've also said bad things about Sonny Misi, and so I just needed to, you know, whatever. It's fine.
The storyline of Altreet Barlow moving to defense is one to watch. I'm curious to see how much playing time he gets. Yeah. Your friend and mine, Dylan Horton, is going to be the starting edge rusher. And you know what? I have heard good things. He's really athletic. He's 6'4", 275. That's heavier than O'Shawn Mathis and taller than Kari Coleman. So you have to compare to Anthony Goodloe from Tulsa, right? Who 6'4", 274. Horton is 6'4", 275. Who basically, his job was, hey, rush the passer and just collapse. Kind of like Williams would collapse in the middle. Just make sure you get 1 or 2 guys on you at all times.
Can I play a really dangerous game of are we sure?
Sure.
Are you prepared for this? If I look at Kari Coleman, can I ask you, are we sure that Kari Coleman is actually good?
I think he can be good.
If I go to 2020 and I see what he did and his pressures, he had 6 against Texas Tech off offensive line, 4 against Kansas. That's almost half of his pressures came against 2 terrible offensive lines. Louisiana Tech, he was super disruptive. I think his rise coincided with some really, really bad defensive lines in 2020. And he was hurt in 2021 more so than we were led on to believe by state media. And if you look at 2021, I mean, he had 5 pressures against Texas Tech and then no more than 2 in any other game. I think it's an open question to say, are we sure that Kari Coleman is that big of a loss? And Dylan Horton, who played safety in high school, super athletic, was on Bruce Feldman's freak list. I mean, could be a really, really nice kind of fit in this, because he's not going to be asked to do a lot more than rush the passer and then in run defense kind of collapse the B gap, right? So it's not like they're going to ask him to be a big body. They're going to say, hey, take your blocker inside or go get the quarterback. There's some elegance and simplicity there.
There is, and I think if you said, hey, Dylan, your job is to go get sacks, then I think that is a simplification, and I think he would succeed there. I think Kari was asked to do a lot, and I don't know. I'm still a Kari Coleman believer, but that's not here or there. And then probably the other – I mean, Landon Watson and Colt Ellison, you may see at edge as well. Ellison seen playing time. Watson's sort of a new face, or at least a new face getting a bunch of snaps. And then elsewhere on the roster, you have Terrell Cooper, who's going to kind of play opposite of Horton on the other side of Williams or whoever plays nose tackle. 6'2", 280, you know, he's been around. He's Terrell Cooper, back on the line. Yeah.
The way to conceptualize that is, like, a little different. There's not, like, end and tackle. There's three positions.
Sure.
And Dylan Horton is going to be, like, the athletic end. Dominic Williams is going to be the hefty nose tackle. Terrell Cooper is going to be kind of the run-stopping tackle. So watch him to be on a certain side of the formation. Like, where Terrell Cooper lines up based on what the offense is doing will be a good indication of, like, how TCU perceives the offense is going to run, because they obviously want the heftier guy there. I expect, Grant, that we see Horton and Cooper maybe line up kind of close to each other at the beginning of the snap, and then after motion kind of move around. He's going to be more of the Jackson Player role. He fits that profile, Jackson Player under 300. And a lot of times what Tulsa did, and as I kind of did my deep dive today, was in obvious pass situations, Tulsa brought in their backup edge rusher, and they had two edge rushers, and they moved Player inside to nose tackle. So Cooper, being a little smaller, a little faster, and with Dominic Williams' problems as a, you know, being running four downs, not that specific to him, just saying big guys and in pass situations, they might move Cooper inside. That would be pretty interesting as well. They have some depth there. George Ellis, Lawal Ugok, who's a UConn transfer. I've heard Paul Oyewale's name some too. I think that's the question. That's the biggest question mark in terms of who's going to start there. But generally, like, they have some options.
Yeah, Ugok is an interesting, I mean, 6'5", 271, that's, you know, a pretty lengthy body to put there. I've heard Oyewale's name as well. We'll see. I mean, it's still a question mark, I think, defensive line is. I'm not really confident in it. But it's something new, and it's not the same old things that TCU's been doing, so I'm fine giving it a bit of a leash. Parker, are you ready to move on to linebackers?
In terms of structural change,
go ahead.
No, I'm not ready to go to linebackers.
Okay, sorry.
In terms of structural change, the defensive line moving from four to three is going to be the biggest deal there. That's the one that's going to take longer. Immediately, you don't have those guys on your roster. You have to figure that out. So that makes sense. Let's move on to linebacker. The Gillespie defense is going to run three linebackers, something TCU hasn't really seen consistently. They're going to have a star who's a little more versatile. Then they're going to have traditional Mike and Will. We're basically substituting kind of that dollar sign that Gary Patterson always writes for that nickelback. That's always traditionally been kind of in between a corner and a safety. It's now going to be more, it's going to be more like a linebacker or an edge rusher. And so we're going to kind of move that guy forward this fall. That's going to be a paradigm shift for TCU.
Yeah, and if you're going to have that, you might as well put your best linebacker there, and that's D. Winters. He's a little more versatile. He's probably seen more snaps than anyone else on the roster at linebacker. He's a good player, and he's going to anchor that linebacking core, because Parker, I am very nervous. We talked about, okay, if you have four subpar defensive linemen, cut that down to three, that eliminates one of your problems. But now you're just adding a problem to linebacker, because you have to fill it with another position. D. Winters is unimpeachable. He deserves a starting spot. Jamoy Hodge has a lot of snaps. I am not as sold on Hodge as I am on Winters.
No, I think that's totally fair. I think Hodge at times, I mean, Grant, how many times last year in rewatching TCU games did you see D. Winters with his arms out looking at Jamoy Hodge, looking at six, saying, what the hell, dude? Yeah. And in a two linebacker system, I mean, if you don't know what's going on, you're in a bad situation, right? I think it's worth looking at coverage grades, or coverage generally. And so D. Winters in coverage last year, he was targeted 21 times. Jamori Hodge was targeted 24 times. Both of them allowed more than 90% reception. I think that a lot of that, so what that suggests is they couldn't stop the guy from getting the ball, but they were able to tackle him pretty quickly. But yeah. I think that D. Winters was doing a lot of cleanup last year. And so if he's free to kind of be this rogue, I think that only benefits him. And if Jamoy Hodge's responsibilities are narrowed, I like him inside as kind of a bulkier run-stopping guy. So his comp at the mic was Justin Wright, who at Tulsa, sorry, as we're mapping the defense onto Tulsa, who was like 6'2", 239, traditional white guy linebacker. Hodge is 6'2", 245. He was sixth in pressures, so not super great in pressures, but he led the team in tackles. He was second in assists, which is important and we'll come back to. And he was first in stops. 100% of his snaps were in the box. So I think if TCU can draw a line around Jamoy Hodge, here are your responsibilities, this is what we're doing, I think that plus some freedom with D. Winters can really be like a rising tide lifts all boats.
I agree. And Hodge is, yeah, I would like him more sort of a run stopper than I would, you know, a coverage linebacker. I would trust Winters more
absolutely.
There. Yeah, so that's fine. If you're going to put him 100% of the time in the box, okay, I am fine with that. And just say, hey, you know, stay here. The Will linebacker is interesting. So Johnny Hodges transfers in from Navy. Johnny Hodges, a good football player, fourth on Navy with 50 tackles last year despite playing just 9 games. And he's a junior, so he was only a sophomore last year. He's an interesting player. Was a lacrosse player, so, you know, we love that. I'm curious to see what he does in the TCU system.
Absolutely, and I think that he is a name, again, kind of this boring consistency on defense. When I mentioned the assists for the Mike linebacker. One of the features of the spill and kill defense that we're going to see from Joe Gillespie this fall is that the defensive line clogs things up and then the linebackers read the play and they fly to the ball. So you're going to see a lot. One linebacker making initial contact, another linebacker coming in and kind of making the tackle. And Hodges at Will, you know, hopefully Hodge and Hodges will be in sync, but that'll be a lot of, you'll see, you know, Johnny Hodges making the tackle and Jamoy Hodge coming and finishing it. There'll be a lot of tandem there. If you look at the guy who played Will for Gillespie's defense last year, most, Yohante Burnett, he traditional outside of linebacker, 8% in the slot. So sometimes he could go out if he had to. He was third in tackle, but he was first in assists and second in stops. He's the guy that seals the deal. So if we're kind of projecting a vision of what TCU's defense is going to be in 2022, D. Winters is going to be like the rogue. He's going to be, you know, hey, we spread out this way, pass rush, I'm going to go to the strong side, I'm going to move around. And then Jamoy Hodge and Johnny Hodges are going to be the Bash brothers. It will not be often that you see a tackle from Hodge where Hodges isn't there and vice versa. It's going to be, one, confusing because their last names are similar.
Yeah, but two, my eyes have already gone crossed. Yeah.
Ideally, these dudes are laying the wood together. Again, as responsibilities are narrowed, as less is asked of them, hopefully you won't see these guys in coverage as much because D. Winters, who's way more experienced and a little bit more versatile, will kind of move around and be able to cover. These two guys are going to be the kill of the spill and kill, reading the play and making that tackle.
Yeah, then you look at who's going to be backing them up. First off, we should say, listen, from what we've heard, Shad Banks has failed to distinguish himself. This is maybe my favorite stat from TCU last year. Shad Banks has the best coverage grade on PFF of any TCU player.
Because he had one snap.
Correct. And that snap was an interception to seal the game against Baylor. So thank you, Shad, for your service.
Shad Rudy Banks. Rudy is his nickname because he came in for one play.
And by God, he made it count, didn't he? Who else is going to be there? I mean, Thomas Armstrong will be there.
I've heard a lot about Armstrong, which is crazy. Yeah. He's a name that's just been thrown around a bunch of camp. Just a dude playing football, man.
Listen, what more do you want? Marcel Brooks, of course, when healthy, who knows if he can be unlimited potential, but kind of a question mark. And then Terrence Cooks as well. He's a Texas transfer. He's a redshirt freshman. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't love the depth here. I'm skeptical of the depth. But I think that the three starters are good. Depth will be an issue. I think Armstrong's fine, but I don't know that he's like a starting guy ideally. And so you start to look at these, hey, we've got some maybe questions about depth on the line. We've got some questions about depth at the linebacker. You get a little worried.
You do. Luckily, I think the safety, I think the back five starting roles are pretty much clear. Like, I don't think there's going to be
Is this the first time that, like, an entire position group has worked out as TCU planned it in terms of development? It might actually be.
Honestly, yeah. It's impressive. It is. So you start with the transfer. Mark Perry going to be playing sort of nickelback. As my voice squeaks like I'm 11 years old. Mark Perry, Colorado transfer. Led Colorado with 3 picks last year. He's a pretty solid player. Bud Clark, probably getting the starting role now, getting the big call up to free safety. And then Parker at strong safety, Millard Bradford, who many of you may know better as Nook. He is now Millard, and so we will respect his wishes.
And Clark and Bradford got a lot of play last year and kind of spot starts at different positions. And these will be really, in terms of changing the defense, these back five are really, really not that huge of a difference. And so I'm optimistic about these guys. Bud Clark, great athlete that we've talked about for a while. Bradford, we've rooted for forever. Perry is very experienced. I like him at the nickel. Again, kind of like D. Winters, we're saying, hey, our most experienced guy is the guy that's going to move around and kind of plug in and help us there. So I feel good about this group. I think that if you look at the like kind of the depth there, there's a lot of guys who have played a lot who won't be starting, but who are worth noting in terms of like Josh McCoon played a lot,
or DeSean McCoon, Josh Foster played.
Yeah, I got that totally messed up. Sorry, yeah, Josh Foster. Who else was there?
Mike I can never pronounce his last name.
Onyemabe. No, didn't he? I thought he meant they retired.
Oh, he did.
Or he's gone. Yeah, I think.
Well,
he's
anyway,
gone.
He, yeah. He's, sorry.
So McCoon and you have Foster behind them that have both played pretty good. Perkins McAllister, I think, is around, and so you have some bodies behind them, and that's encouraging. But this is probably, behind cornerback is probably the strongest unit here, because these guys have been around for a while. Perry's played a bunch, and then they're not going to have to learn this like complex, archaic Patterson system. They're going to learn some first principles and be able to react. So I think this is a pretty strong unit.
Yeah, I do too. And then, as you mentioned, cornerback is going to be, I mean, Noah Daniels and Travis Hodges Tomlinson. It's a really strong unit. They just have to stay healthy. I mean, THT has been maybe the best corner in the conference, one of the best corners in the conference every time he takes the field, but can he be healthy? Same with Noah Daniels. So you have an interesting note. You're curious about who takes boundary and who takes field. Yeah. Daniels is a little bit bigger. Travis obviously is a little, he's a tiny lad. So what's your thought process there?
I always laugh about this. You know the Portlandia skit where Fred Armisen's like, I'm a little guy. I got little hands and I don't like
Fred Armisen. I don't watch Portlandia. I find
you just don't like comedy. That's fine. You don't like comedy. He is a little smarmy. That's fine. That's a fair criticism. But I'm interested to see what they do. Last year, THT played field because they had to cover so much of, they were trying to bury CJ Caesar. Because the defense was so bad and he just wasn't good. And that's why you saw, like, Hodges Tomlinson gave up some big completions last year because he was playing field, but he was still on an island. So he was playing field like he was the boundary. I would be surprised if they didn't flip him over to the boundary and then put Noah Daniels to the field. Because obviously, if for the uninitiated, field and boundary means boundary is like which side is, because the hashes are so wide in college football, which side of the field is the ball on. And so boundary is like you're closer to the boundary. That generally means it's you and the number one receiver and you got to figure something out. Field means, hey, we're probably going to put a couple safeties over there and kind of give you some help. What TCU did last year was they put THT in the field, gave CJ Caesar the boundary so that he could play the sideline as an extra defender. Didn't work out great. But I understand the reasoning behind it. I'm just interested to see what they do with them, because they do have a talent, or not a talent disparity, a size disparity. I also hope Noah Daniels as well. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn saying that he has had some non-injury off-field issues that where it's just like, dude, I hope you're okay, and like you're gonna be great if you can show up every day and make things happen. And I think the last 3 years we've talked ourselves into this being the best cornerback duo in college football. Can Noah Daniels hold up his end of the bargain? That's a big question. If he plays, I have no doubt that this is going to be amazing, and it's going to take a ton of pressure off of the front six. But I'm worried about kind of what that happens there.
Me too. And then if let's say one of them can't play, Keon Stewart's still available. I think he's been a little... I don't want to speak out of turn. Has he been banged up during practice? I can't remember if it was him or another
corner. I feel like he had an injury last year. But I haven't heard much of him out of camp this year.
Listen, better him than Caesar, all I'm saying. Stewart's still on the roster. He has experience, and I'd rather him be the third man than CJ Caesar would be. But it's a good... Listen, if you're going to start a defense and you're implementing all these new changes up front, you're switching from four down to three down, you're switching from two linebackers to three linebackers, you might as well have a good solid five to kind of back you up and just let the front six work things out. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll be fun to watch for college football fans, kind of how Joe Gillespie decides to put pressures, like disguise pressures and make pressures happen. Because, again, you have your three guys rushing, you have three linebackers who have very distinct different skill sets. How is Gillespie going to say, hey, we're bringing this guy, we're not bringing this guy? Might see some safety blitzes and some passing downs. Just something to watch, again, as we're trying to be better consumers of college football content. I'm interested in how they're going to bring pressure in addition to those three guys.
For sure, for sure. We should also mention... You can do the shout-out, too, but a lot of our... we should mention Jamie Plunkett, who is... like been on the ground, and he's kind of been our eyes and ears a little bit, I think.
What's happened these last two episodes, because I haven't been at camp, and I have drummed up theories in my mind, and I have texted Jamie and been like, hey, is this right? And he's been like, no, you're an idiot. Here's what's actually happening. And especially on the defensive side of the ball, where I feel like it's less, you know, people are posting less about the defense and they're more about the offense and everything. He's been very helpful. He's over at Frogs Today. They're doing some great stuff. Go subscribe if you want the inside info. Grant and I don't know inside info. We can look at the games, we can analyze and everything, but we know what our strengths are. If you want that kind of frontline information, I would go over to Frogs Today. And shout out to Jamie. Thanks for him helping us out with some of these, who's going to be where in these first iterations of the TCU offense and defense.
All the good takes are Jamie's and all the bad takes are ours.
No, the opposite. If you don't like a take, it's because Jamie told me that it was going to be this way. After we play one game, then it's the opposite.
Okay. But all right.
Preseason, yeah.
Parker, do you want to do... I'll give you a choice. Do you want to do our schedule breakdown first, or do you want to take some listener responses?
Let's hear from
Let's hear from our favorite people, our listeners, except for the ones that make fun of us, which case we don't like you. You asked specifically, what do you predict TCU's record will be in 2022? What's a trap game? What's a must win? And what is best case, worst case scenario? We'll start with a couple friends of the pod. Yell MK predicts 8-4. Must win SMU and Texas Tech because he'd rather just not deal with the fallout there. Trap game being West Virginia. If the Frogs are 4-3 going into Morgantown, will they be motivated to win? Best possibility would be 9-3, worst 5-7, lower if significant injuries take their toll. So 5-7 with no injuries is his worst case scenario. That seems fair to me. Motivated to win 4-3 going into Morgantown is interesting. I don't know if that's the decision point I would make, but that's fair.
Yeah, I like that as an inflection point. TCU hasn't beaten Neil Brown. Absolute awful games against West Virginia. So I think that's a good benchmark of what's going to happen here. And they'll have played Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Kansas State. Like, there will be some bodyings there. That'll be kind of the, what kind of level are we setting for the rest of the season?
Yeah. Colin Post, another friend of the pod, @ColinP_3, also says 8-4. trap game, SMU on the road, and Judas's return, which I think just means Texas coming. Although Judas's return, we played Texas. Oh, Judas being Dykes.
I thought that's what he meant was the SMU game. Dude, they are super not chill about taking a P5 job.
Well, they're about that specific P5 job. I thought for a second he was talking about Gary, but TCU goes to Austin this year.
Dude, no, Gary is not Judas. Gary is a toddler who has wet himself and needs some help. Yeah.
Must win Tech for obvious reasons, and then he put a cactus emoji. Best case, steal a win for Baylor or UT and squeak out 9-3, and Sam Jackson starts at QB. Hell yeah. Worst case, no win of the Big 12 is promised for this TCU team. They lose a bunch of one-score games and go 4-8. That sounds awfully familiar. Losing one-score games and going 4-8.
Look, man, there's weeping and gnashing of teeth in the night, but joy comes in the morning.
Yeah, there is no joy in Mudville. Keegan Renault, 6-6, another friend of the pod, must win at SMU and Texas Tech. Best case, 10-2. No. And worst case, 4-8.
Okay, but that's kind of like most of the... Most college football teams, it's like, hey, the best case is 10-2, and our worst case is
10-2. If it's 10-2, I'll eat the hat that I'm wearing right now. That's a promise. Stephen Simcox, at Simcox Stephen. Going off book, we're just going to ask if you and Grant will take over Calling All Frogs this year. No, I'm not going to do that. If you listen to this podcast, and you're one of five people that listen to this pod and get my game day snap, that is my Calling All Frogs. So use your imagination.
I might, but I'm willing to let Coach Dykes put his own new stuff on things. So I'm going to let him see what he does first. I'm not going to do it like the first game.
Fair enough. Funk Hefe at the Duncan Soul, 7-5. That's a 2-game improvement. Must win is SMU. Trap game is Iowa State. If TCU beats Baylor. Ceiling is 9, floor is 6. Sneaky experienced team with a ton of juniors and seniors. If TCU shows up emotionally, they can beat anyone. But emotional buy-in is key. I'm fine with that. I think that's true.
Gotta get hype.
Gotta get hype. A, Bacchiera, AB, 6-6 or 7-5. Worst case, 8-4. Or excuse me, best case 8-4, worst case 4-8. Trap game, Kansas. That's for everybody. And must wins, SMU Tech, and of course, Kansas. Let's see. Throwback Frog. TCU records, exactly 1 million toads. Must win, SMU. Okay, scenario is doing bits now. Scenario, that 2015 movie with Benicio Del Toro. But a good question. What does this TCU staff have to do this season? What is the absolute minimum they've got to achieve to at least not lose faith from the fans? I think a fun 5-7.
5-7 with like 3-1 score losses.
But like fun.
If it's right, so you're like close in a couple games and the 5 wins are great. I think if you beat SMU and go 5-7 and have a couple 1 score losses, we're like, okay, maybe this will work out. I'm still, Grant, I think I've said this off air and I'm fine to say it on air. I still think Sonny Dykes is like 3 years and gone. Like I don't know that I believe in this long term. But I think there's still some fun to be had in the interim.
Yeah. 5-7 is the minimum, I would say, if that's what your question is. P1 Paps at GDaddy719, a very competitive 6-6. I think the Big 12 was tougher than expected this season. Okay, put a pin in that. And Brett Musselwhite at Brett Mussel, 9-3, must win either UT or Baylor on the road, and either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State at home. Ceiling 11-1, and floor 6-6.
Because I want to win one of those games. I agree. I want to win at least one of both of those. Yeah.
Well, now, Parker, it's time to sort of face the music. Because as you know, if you're a listener, we've been making schedule predictions all year long, and we have been keeping track to hold ourselves accountable of what we said earlier in previews. So we haven't done Colorado, Tarleton, or SMU yet, but we have done previews for all Big 12 teams. Parker, you and I both have TCU going 3-6 in the Big 12.
Do we have them going the same 3-6?
No. We both have them beating Kansas.
Okay.
We both have them beating Texas, which I think is spite, but we're sticking with it. You have them beating Tech. I have them losing. I have them beating Baylor. You have them losing.
Okay. I pulled up a tweet from January 6th of this year. No significance to that date at all.
I was biting my tongue. Don't. Okay.
That's not even a joke. Just the tweet happened on January 6th of this year. I had them at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7 going 2-7 in the Big 12. And I had at Kansas, win versus Texas Tech.
Yeah. And then we added the Texas win for spite, which makes sense. So I'm fine with most of this. I think if I had to revise one, I had them losing both at West Virginia and at home to Tech. I would probably pick up a win there.
Can I propose to you something?
Sure.
Let's throw our previous predictions out the window and let's pick each game based on vibes. Let's just do it again. We've talked ourselves. Offense, defense.
Let's start from the top. Colorado.
Win by a lot. Win. Embarrassing win. Flex the offense. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Tarleton. Win. Although, do not mess around and lose this game. Do not do it, but it's going to be a win.
If TCU loses to Tarleton, it's entirely your fault for saying that sentence. I just want to let you know.
That's fine. Bye week, then at SMU.
Play defense, scrubs. 38 SMU fans are going to be in the fans yelling obscenities for Sunny Dykes. TCU's going to go up 14-0, and they're going to leave. It's going to be fine.
Right away. All right. Oklahoma. Still think, even with vibes, still think it's a loss.
Yeah, it's a loss.
At Kansas. Win.
Win.
Yep.
Preferably by double digits. Just restore some order.
Ideally. Oklahoma State at home.
Probably a loss.
Kansas State at home.
Probably
a loss. I'm riding with Kansas State this year. That's a loss. At West Virginia, I'm saying a win.
Winning 3 and then going 1-3 in your next 4 is really depressing. Honestly, give me a win at West Virginia. Look.
This is what Yelich was saying. He was right. That inflection point at West Virginia. If they're 4-3, do they care? At home versus Tech. I'm changing it to a win.
Win.
Okay.
Brian Carrington goes and dances on Joey McGuire's grave. It's great.
At Texas. I'm changing to a loss, actually, but that's...
No! Angelou went down. You're right.
All those injuries.
Is down. Dude, our Texas preview is so out of date already. Win. Friggin' win.
At Baylor.
Win.
Win. At home versus Iowa State.
Matt Campbell couldn't do it.
Win.
With the returning production, he can't do it without the returning production. He's overrated. He took advantage of the COVID year. Win. What's that record?
All right, so now we have them at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now we got about 9-3, baby.
Hell yeah. Okay, that's what happened. I was on the Tortillas and Takes podcast, like I said earlier, and he was like, what did you project for TCU last season? I was like, dude, I didn't make a projection. We like talked ourselves into like 4-8 and into 12-0. Like, we could do anything. I think 9-3 is totally possible.
It's completely plausible. Look, okay, you're 4-3 going into West Virginia. You've already played Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Kansas State. Right? Those are 3 of the 4 best teams in the conference. Go ahead and win some damn games. Lick your wounds, beat West Virginia, beat Tech. Yeah.
Tech is too early for them to be playing for bowl eligibility, so win. You don't have any emotion there. Texas has long quit. Baylor, long quit. Iowa State already went to a bowl. Like, Baylor and Iowa State, I think, same thing. They both have 6 wins. They're not, like, super motivated to, like, hey, we're going to go to the Cheez-It Bowl instead of the First Responder Bowl. Like, no motivation. You could do it, man. If the offense gets humming, I think you could absolutely do it.
This podcast is ending on a much more upbeat note than I expected it to. So, between 6-6 and 9-3, go to a bowl, have some fun, don't do anything stupid. Coast into next year with Sam Jackson ready to take the reins.
Go drop 50 on Central Michigan in the First Responder Bowl. Hell yeah.
Just absolutely decimate the Chippewas. And that's, are they? Yeah. Western Michigan's the Chippewas.
No. Western Michigan's the Broncos. Central Michigan's the Chippewas. Although I always get confused. Why aren't they the Chippewa, not the Chippewas?
That's a good question.
I'm not an expert, but I've read one or two books. I feel like the Chippewa is like, it's the Chippewa people. This is probably not a good discussion for us to have. Cut us off.
It really isn't, but it comes from a place of love. Parker, this, for the second time in 3 days, has been the Purple Theory Podcast.
This is officially too much Purple Theory Podcast.
You are Parker Fleming, and you can be found on Twitter at Stats of War and on the BetUS podcast. BetUS
College Football Show went live today. We did futures bets. Just go to YouTube, search BetUS College Football, subscribe, hop in there, press that button. Really great stuff from Kyle and Gary today.
Perfect. And I'm Grant McGalliard. I'm on Twitter at Grant McGalliard, spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. We will be back next week, Parker, with the preview of the gosh darn Colorado Buffalo. Actual football is on the horizon.
And Grant and I will both be there. And if you're there, you should holler at us. We will come drink a beer and say hey.
Yes, buy us a beer if you see us. Until then, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.